Chapter 15. After a night's rest, we rose early, and in good time went down to the wharf, and on board the packet New York for New York. This was the first American steamboat of any size that I had seen, and certainly to an English eye it was infinitely less like a steamboat than a huge floating bath. I could hardly persuade myself, indeed, but that the bathing establishment off Westminster Bridge, which I left a baby, had suddenly grown to an enormous size, run away from home, and set up in foreign parts as a steamer. Being in America too, which our vagabonds do so particularly favor, it seemed the more probable. The great difference in appearance between these packets and ours is that there is so much of them out of the water. The main deck being enclosed on all sides, and filled with casks and goods, like any second or third floor in a stack of warehouses, and the promenade or hurricane deck being atop of that again. A part of the machinery is always above this deck, where the connecting rod, in a strong and lofty frame, is seen working away like an iron-topped sawyer. There is seldom any master tackle, nothing aloft but two tall black chimneys. The man at the helm is shut up in a little house in the fore part of the boat, the wheel being connected with the rudder by iron chains, working the whole length of the deck, and the passengers, unless the weather be very fine indeed, usually congregate below. Directly you have left the wharf, all the life, and stir, and bustle of a packet cease. You wonder for a long time how she goes on, for there seems to be nobody in charge of her. And when another of these dull machines comes splashing by, you feel quite indignant with it, as a sullen, cumbrous, ungraceful, unshiplike leviathan. Quite forgetting that the vessel you are on board of is its very counterpart. There is always a clerk's office on the lower deck, where you pay your fare, a lady's cabin, baggage and stowage rooms, engineer's room, and in short a great variety of perplexities which render the discovery of the gentleman's cabin a matter of some difficulty. It often occupies the whole length of the boat, as it did in this case, and has three or four tiers of berths on each side. When I first descended into the cabin of the New York, it looked, in my unaccustomed eyes, about as long as the Burlington Arcade. The sound which has to be crossed on this passage is not always a very safe or pleasant navigation, and has been the scene of some unfortunate accidents. It was a wet morning, and very misty, and we soon lost sight of land. The day was calm, however, and brightened towards noon. After exhausting, with good help from a friend, the larder, and the stock of bottled beer, I lay down to sleep, being very much tired with the fatigues of yesterday. But I woke from my nap in time to hurry up and see Hellgate, the Hawk's Back, the Frying Pan, and other notorious localities, attractive to all readers of famous Diedrich Knickerbocker's history. We were now in a narrow channel, with sloping banks on either side, besprinkled with pleasant villas, and made refreshing to the sight by turf and trees. Soon we shot in quick succession, past a lighthouse, a madhouse, how the lunatics flung up their caps, and roared in sympathy with the headlong engine and the driving tide, semicolon a jail, and other buildings, and so emerged into a noble bay, whose waters sparkled in the now cloudless sunshine like nature's eyes turned up to heaven. Then there lay stretched out before us, to the right, confused heaps of buildings, with here and there a spire or steeple, looking down upon the herd below, and here and there, again, a cloud of lazy smoke, and in the foreground a forest of ship's masts, cheery with flapping sails and waving flags. Crossing from among them to the opposite shore were steam ferry boats laden with people, coaches, horses, wagons, baskets, boxes, crossed and recrossed by other ferry boats, all traveling to and fro, and never idle. Stately among these restless insects were two or three large ships, moving with slow majestic pace, as creatures of a prouder kind, disdainful of their puny journeys, and making for the broad sea. beyond were shining heights, and islands in the glancing river, and a distance scarcely less blue and bright than the sky it seemed to meet. The city's hum and buzz, the clinking of capstans, the ringing of bells, the barking of dogs, the clattering of wheels, tingled in the listening ear. All of which life and stir, coming across the stirring water, caught new life and animation from its free companionship, and, sympathizing with its buoyant spirits, glistened as it seemed in sport upon its surface, and hemmed the vessel round, and plashed the water high about her sides, and, floating her gallantly into the dock, flew off again to welcome other comers, and speed before them to the busy port. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.